You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Welcome to the Breakfast Table, presented by the 8-Bit Waffles crew. We are here in Podcast Detroit Studios in Royal Oak.
Hey guys, I'm Darshan.
How's it going? It's Ferris.
And I'm your host, Brad, and we're here to talk about all avenues of entertainment. Today, specifically, we have a lot on our plate as we dive into CES 2018. Darshan, you are the professional when it comes to tech. Why don't you help us get through this?
Yeah, so let's talk about CES first from a history standpoint. It used to be called the Consumers Electronics Show, but now CES is the official name. It's an annual trade show hosted in Las Vegas every January, and it started back in 1967, but it's been happening year after year since 2002.
Yeah, it's actually the big conference when it comes to everything that you're going to see in the future from like Samsung and LG. And when it came to like thin TVs and stuff like that, this was like the premier show.
Yeah.
For getting that information.
So any new products, technologies, and consumer electronics industry, this is the trade show that most companies go to present those products.
Yeah. So we have E3 for games. CES is that for technology.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, let's start off with my favorite one, which I personally think won the show, which is NVIDIA. NVIDIA did a really great job with their announcements this year. One of my favorites from a gaming perspective is the big format gaming display. The BFGD is what I like to call it. Real quick, let's just run down the specs. It's a 65-inch 4K display, so you know it's enormous. It's got some G-Sync panels, HDR, 1,000 nits of brightness. It's a 120Hz refresh rate, so... yeah, these displays have some of the lowest latency you could physically have on a big screen. What's also cool is if you do PC gaming on it, which is kind of the primary thing that you would want to take advantage of with this display, you don't have to have your PC directly connected to the monitor itself to play the games. You can actually stream through what's called the NVIDIA Game Stream.
Which I believe is based on the old... the NVIDIA Shield streaming service that they had for a while.
Yeah, and speaking of NVIDIA Shield, this actually has NVIDIA Shield built in to the monitor itself. So NVIDIA Shield, if you're not aware of, is like a little Android box that you can get that allows you to play a lot of HDR content and things like that through streaming services such as Netflix and Hulu. It's basically an Android OS in the background.
It's based on the Apple TV, if I recall correctly, yeah. Or the Roku.
Yeah, it's like it was Chromecast before Chromecast was really a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was one of the bigger things about the Shield tablet is that when it first came out, you could play everything that you had on your PC that was at least synced with NVIDIA's GeForce experience on the go. Sure, it wasn't the fastest experience, but it was definitely there. Definitely the thing I'm liking about this, too, is that like with the whole big display, the problem that you really suffer from with a lot of PC gaming is that like the bigger the screen is, the more you pay. And I'm already I can expect this to be a decent price. But the issue, too, is that like you don't really get a great gaming experience by plugging an HDMI from your computer to your TV. Like you get that bigger screen, but it's not usually either the most crisp it can be, or it's like you have latency issues and whatnot. And then obviously, like you have other issues to run into. So I'm really excited to see that NVIDIA's embracing the idea of bringing the PC from your computer room into your family room.
Yeah, into the living room. And then, you know, combining that with the ability to do a full array of 4K HDR content, you know, from like doing Netflix and Hulu with the Shield apps, all those, you know, great things that go along with home theater entertainment along with PC gaming.
Yeah, closing the ecosystem, because a lot of people have to use so many proprietary software just to get that to work. And sometimes it doesn't work the best, so.
And another thing that they are working on since actually last year with the Mac, it's now available on PC, is the GeForce Now, which is a ability to let you stream gaming on a 1080 graphics card from the cloud. It's currently, like I said, available for the Mac, but it was announced also that it's for the PC. It's currently in beta. And yeah, basically you can play like a 1080 Ti graphics card through the cloud onto like a crappy $200 laptop, such as like an HP Stream or something like that.
Yeah, as long as you have a decent connection. I'm assuming that it's very closely based to like the whole like cloud gaming with like, what was it,
OnLive?
Yeah.
Yeah, that failure of...
OnLive failed from other reasons, not because it was a...
Great concept.
Great concept, But undisclosed gaming location number one ruined it.
That too.
That.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they got into a lot of trouble. Like, they were taking a – so, like, there were games that were shipping with OnLive, like, subscriptions. So it's like, oh, you can do, like, a month or 2 months. They were opening up the games to take it out of there because otherwise, like, obviously if you're – actively promoting another like gaming company, it's not going to really work out for you, which is stupid to even like go inside that because like literally every one of them you're selling is open to the stupid.
I mean, with a company like Nvidia, you know it's going to be really solid,
right?
Especially with the hardware background that they have, it's going to work. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of, you know, when are people going to adopt it? You know,
I'm really excited for it because I know Nvidia is really great with like. Getting their games – no, not games. Getting the support of a lot of developers. So I'm really hoping that this really catches on to the point where I can have my computer either streaming in my front room or in the event like when Shields come out later on down the line, I can use my gaming computer in my front room without it being that much of an issue.
Yeah, and speaking of developers, they're also getting their hands full with a lot of – connecting with a lot of notebook manufacturers and designers. Mm-hmm. Let's dive into what they also announced, which is the Max-Q Design Gaming Notebooks. Mm-hmm. So basically it turns those hunky gaming laptop rigs that you see nowadays into like thin, lightweight ultrabooks. They're about like 18 millimeters thick. Mm. So it's like literally taking that huge rig gaming notebook that you have right now and cutting it in half. Mm-hmm. And it's got a GeForce GTX 1080 GPU, so and it's mobile.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's four times the performance of a MacBook Pro. And like I said, they worked really, really closely with a lot of laptop manufacturers to hit that golden trifecta of slimness, performance, and cooling. Mm-hmm. So from a system software standpoint, thermal management standpoint, power supply design, all those things were key components in trying to design these, you know, these notebooks.
Yeah, like that was really a big problem with a lot of like the – like the gaming laptops, is like, sure, you spend like – you're already spending a decent bit of money.
Yeah, you
on a
are.
You're starting at $2,000 typically.
You're starting at $2,000 to – if you want to have a 1080, yeah. You're starting at $2,000. And then like it's just not convenient. Like whether it be battery life issues because the thing's dying like 2 hours.
It's chunky.
Yeah, like that or like just it's not convenient. Like even like in a sense of Brad's laptop, like don't get me wrong. It's a nice computer,
oh, yeah.
But it's not convenient.
It's more so like a desktop replacement than it is like a traveling device.
Yeah.
You know? It's chunky. It's hard to bring with you on a plane. Mm-hmm. It's not really unique. And, you know, and what NVIDIA did was they used the information that it mined from about 400 popular games and chose those settings or kind of like mined those settings over time. And use that information to offer the best balance between smooth frame rates, sharp details, mm-hmm. and lower GPU consumption. So it basically can self-calibrate itself to
work with your
Work with your computer and your games.
Yeah, like and I'm really excited about that due to like they were about a year ago, they were really dabbling around the idea of using Thunderbolt connected GPUs, which in theory sounds really cool, but it doesn't because it's like imagine having like this little like briefcase kind of next to your computer that you can only plug in through Thunderbolt, which means you probably have an expensive computer already to have that mm-hmm. to use a GPU to have like use it in conjunction with your computer. So obviously if you have a great CPU in it, you can play great games if you have this with you, but it was really cumbersome. So I'm really liking the fact that they're pushing to have something more flush and unique.
Yeah. Compared to having something in the motherboard on the logic board, instead of hovering over a Thunderbolt port, you know, mm-hmm. I could do like a few gigabits per second transfer rate, but still, I mean, when it's on the main board, it's, you know, it's getting those ones and zeros like it should.
I'm hoping sometime in the future we'll get it to the point where you can upgrade laptops. Like when you get to the point where you can upgrade your laptops with their GPUs, CPUs with no issue without you having to go in and really do something to your laptop or having to just completely upgrade the thing entirely or get a new one. That's when we're really going to make it.
I don't think that'll ever be a trend. I mean, maybe a company might do it one day where you mm-hmm. can kind of get like a bare bones style mm-hmm. laptop that you can kind of build yourself with your own components. Mm-hmm. But I'm noticing a trend, especially with Apple. They're making it more difficult for their hardware products to be replaceable, repaired mm-hmm. by third-party vendors. They want to keep that to themselves mm-hmm. because more money for them.
Yeah, I was going to say
more money for maintenance. Made, yeah. You know, the warranty plan, you know. They make a lot of money off of those.
Yeah, I know that for a while Razer was messing with the idea of like a modular laptop, and then they completely dropped it and stopped talking about it entirely. So either it completely fails from a technology standpoint, or it's not worth the time and money invested to upgrade it.
Yeah, I think the key too is to get a lot of the hardware vendors on board with that, and that might just be a tough thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you're trying to create standards there.
Right.
So, but it's a good idea and concept.
Yeah. Like, especially when you think about it, it's like, oh, I spent $2,000 on this. Ooh, it's outdated now.
Yeah.
$2,000 again.
And then another awesome thing that they talked about is related to artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. You know, there's these – now you're starting to see artificial intelligence be more prevalent from a hardware perspective. NVIDIA announced several CPUs and platforms that are related to AI and using their GPUs to basically do deep learning as well as using those hardware for autonomous driving. So let's play a real quick clip, about 6 minutes long, from the CEO of NVIDIA. Doing his presentation at CES.
The second growth driver for us is AI. This last year, we announced the single most complex processor the world has ever made. This is called the NVIDIA Tesla V100 Volta. 21 billion transistors. It's the largest chip the world has ever made. 12 nanometer FinFET. Every single cloud service provider in the world has adopted this processor. The very first time in history, one single architecture has been adopted everywhere. We also containerized the entire supercomputer into one server. We call it the DGX. This is the DGX supercomputer. 8 processors, 1 petaflops, connected with NVLink in a 3U server. If you would like to do deep learning on your own PC, we have a brand new computer, brand new processor called the Titan V, $3,000, the most powerful GPU for your PC ever made, and it replaces basically supercomputers. Well, the reason why we're growing so fast is because the value proposition is absolutely incredible. 1/6 the cost, 1/20 the power, 4 racks reduced into 1 box. That's the reason why people are jumping on the NVIDIA GPU for deep learning. That entire stage would be filled with computers, and it could be replaced with this. That is the power of GPU for deep learning. We can even write music. We decided to teach a neural network how to compose music like John Williams. We're now able to use software to write software by itself. AV, autonomous vehicles, powered by deep learning and AI, is going to revolutionize driving, no doubt. AV can save millions of lives and, frankly, trillions of dollars. And so today we're announcing that the world's first autonomous machine processor, we call the Drive Xavier, and the largest chip the world has ever made, called Volta. 512 of those processors fit into another monster chip in my other pocket. I am carrying in my back pockets, ladies and gentlemen, several billion dollars of R&D investment. Look at this chip. Look how big it is. This is the largest SoC the world has ever made. The most complex SoC ever made. 9 billion transistors, 350 millimeters squared, made from 12 nanometer FinFET, 8,000 engineering years, as I've mentioned. Now, inside this chip, let me just very quickly mention it. There are 8 CPU cores based on 64-bit ARM, completely custom, 10 wide superscalar, 2700 spec-int, basically approximately a server on a chip. It also has this mode called dual execution. It runs everything twice. It runs everything twice without consuming twice the horsepower, using this clever technique called dual execution. It's 512 CUDA cores, which with this 20 tensor core TOPS, 20 teraops. We have the ability to encode video for every single camera, 6 plus 2 plus inside the cabin, for every single camera in high dynamic range if something were to happen. Okay, so basically your black box. That right there is the Drive Xavier, the world's first autonomous machine processor running the entire software stack, NVIDIA Drive Xavier, and we will be sampling it in Q1, and we should be in production before the end of the year. One of our engineers got into the car and drove 8 miles without touching the steering wheel. Look at this. No helmet. That Baidu and ZF has selected the NVIDIA Drive Xavier for their AV computing platform development in China. For the level 5 market, and all of our level 5 robot taxi partners, is the Pegasus, the NVIDIA Drive Pegasus. It is powered by these two Xaviers that I've already mentioned, just 400 watts. And with two, either one or two, you should be able to power a robot taxi, a level 5 driverless car. It replaced an entire supercomputer in just one motherboard. I'm also delighted to announce that Uber, the company that put mobility as a service on the map, has chosen NVIDIA technology, and we're partnered together to create future autonomous self-driving Ubers. Ultimately, the most important feature of a self-driving car is not that it drives by itself. The most important feature is actually safety. To experience and put your car on the road to be able to test every single condition necessary. We developed one of the most complex simulation environments we've ever done and run it inside a virtual reality simulator. We call it AutoSim. Curtis is basically driving the car in the simulator, and Drive is responding to it. Today we're announcing a brand new platform called the NVIDIA Drive AR. It's a software stack that runs on exactly the same computer. It almost looks like the computer graphics is right there in the environment.
So that is just from the hour and how long?
Well, it was like an hour and 20 minutes, and I took that and concised it into 10 minutes, and I took that and concised it into 6 minutes.
Yeah, so there is a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot that they talked about. But yeah, real quick to reiterate, they have an SoC, which is a system on a chip, and they created a GPU called the Tesla V100 Volta. And they took about 8 of those and put it in a server for deep learning called the DGX1. And that server itself is only 3 U's thick on a rack. And it takes the computing power of what would be like 4 racks into one.
So to kind of put that in perspective for somebody, four racks?
Yeah, like 4 full stack racks of computers that do AI and deep learning.
So
punched down into like one single server that's only like 3 U's thick, which is like, you know,
So each U is about 4 inches. So this thing's about a foot tall. By, I think it's like 3 feet deep for a normal server, close to that. So it's a concise, lot of power.
Yeah,
and in a small box.
That's what you're noticing, and that's why they're doing this, is that they want to concise all the power consumption and hardware and everything that these companies use and trying to bring it into a smaller unit. Also, they announced, you know, the most powerful GPU ever, which is the Titan V. Mm-hmm. It's a $3,000 GPU. I mean,
that's only $500 more than the Titans right now. So.
Oh, really? Yeah. So no biggie there. But you could do deep AI learning on just a single computer with it.
Or play Crysis.
Yeah. Crysis, yes.
Almost on full settings.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, he dives into AI and how AI GPUs can be used for autonomous vehicles. And there's a autonomous vehicle drive CPU called the Xavier. It takes those Voltas, you times it by 512, and you combine them together, and over 20 teraops in computational ability. And what's really cool about it is it has the ability to capture, what, like 10-plus dashboard cameras in an autonomous vehicle all at once and encode them in full HDR.
See, the thing of that really got me is the fact that they drove for 8 miles through different road conditions completely hands-free the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane, especially considering the – I'm trying to remember if it was Tesla that had some tests, and when they rained on their test course, they completely just went off track every single test they did. Because the water reflecting off the ground
– the LiDARs couldn't detect it properly.
Right.
Yeah.
So with this, they were able to do it through, I don't know if rain was one of the conditions, I had to assume, because it's one of the standard conditions most people would drive in. But 8 miles going through different conditions, completely hands-free, not switching settings or anything like that. It automatically knew. That is impressive.
It's really cool. NVIDIA is definitely leading the way and connecting with a lot more partners, definitely more than what I've seen with Intel, on basically a driving platform and a piece of hardware, a CPU or GPU that connects with these platforms. They came out with a logic board with the CPUs or GPUs built into them, and it's an all-in-one platform that you put into your autonomous vehicle, and it does everything for you all on one motherboard with, you know, a couple chips on it. It's really sweet, and I guess they're also working on robotic taxis. They're taking two of those Xaviers, combining them together. They're calling it the Pegasus, and it's basically a supercomputer on a motherboard. Let's be real here. It's crazy. And, you know, what's also interesting is they're realizing that these autonomous vehicles are never going to be perfect in regards to, you know, making the right decision while driving, like you were saying, with the Teslas and just not being able to work on wet conditions. They're building a what's called an auto sim, which is allowing to drive these autonomous vehicles inside a simulation. So you can go into a driving simulator, kind of teach the autonomous vehicle, you know, software to or AI to kind of learn the ways of driving and kind of tackle those situations that, you know, it couldn't otherwise not learn on its own. And and they have that, and they have the platform. It's called NVIDIA Drive AR, which is the same hardware that runs the Xavier and the Pegasus, also runs the auto simulation. So it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's insane technology. Yeah. Something we won't see for a couple of years.
Next level stuff.
Yeah.
2020s, this is what it's going to be all about.
Yeah, because they said they were going to be doing some serious testing quarter one this year.
Yeah, it's coming out for testing this quarter and next quarter, and then probably in production later this year.
That's insane. I'm still interested in that $3,000 GPU.
Yeah. I'll take it.
I want to see how good that can play Crysis, maybe even Crysis 2.
You know, the funny thing is that the Titans, like, what was it, like, originally when, like, they made, like, the 10 series, like, obviously, like, I want to say when they originally made the Titan, it was on the Maxwell architecture for NVIDIA, and then they made Pascal, and then they made the new Titan X for it, right? The Titan X was premier. Like, you could do literally everything you ever wanted. You can play Grand Theft Auto in 4K, right? You know, the premier situation.
Right.
But, like, it was really no practicality in the sense of someone who was a gamer. Now, obviously, in the sense of, like, for actual computing or, like, let's say you do a lot of graphic work, it's 100% worth it. It's just the price point was really ridiculous. And then now they're just like, let's go double what it was and just see if people will buy it now. Like, NVIDIA's definitely no – they're no stranger to the idea of charging a lot for their GPUs because if you're very interested, look up the Quattro series graphics cards they have.
Was that the one that was $10,000 at launch?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like they start at like 6,000. But like they're purely for graphics design. Like they have no use in anything else.
I remember businesses use them for CAD implementation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I've seen them is actually in their mobile GPUs that are in CAD workstations.
Yeah, Quadros.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like they're really great. Like I mean they have the power. Like they have like 32 gigs of GDDR5X. Like obviously their clock speed's ridiculous. It's just like they can literally do whatever they want, but they're not optimized for anything but that.
Mm.
I would feel like if you pay like $10,000 for something, I would like to use it for something maybe on the side, but who knows?
Well, maybe it can play Minesweeper.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We would hope.
In 60 frames at least.
So yeah, moving on from NVIDIA. I mean, like I said, NVIDIA stole the show for me, but so I figured let's start with the greatest thing, you know. Let's talk about Intel. Intel announced that it'll patch most of its recent chips with against Spectre and Meltdown. Do you want to kind of elaborate what that is, Brad?
To elaborate in the most simple terms, they were both very, very, very bad for businesses. Basically, they would allow servers to overwrite other servers.
Hmm? Yeah.
Yeah. So if you had your music collection on one server and you had your video collection on the other, your video collection server could overwrite your music collection server. And you would lose all your music.
Oh,
this was a glitch in every Intel CPU that's come out since the Core 2 Not even the Core 2 Duo, the Core 2.
So how long? So how many years? If you don't give me a
couple generations.
2002, 2003?
But they're gonna,
if I recall correctly.
They're going to bring in a patch to update most of the recent ones, and they're hoping that it'll be pushed out by the end of this month.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think that the updates do cause a 30% performance reduction.
Yeah, they make it so your CPU isn't as good anymore, but it doesn't have this issue.
I'll just take the risk.
So, you know, an interesting thing is Intel is kind of forming a frenemy situation with AMD on its 8th generation Core CPUs. AMD's got something called the RX Vega M, which is basically a GPU on a CPU, and they're combining AMD's GPU on Intel's CPU and basically putting this on, I'm assuming, the mobile platforms.
Yeah, and then AMD is ATI, is their GPU kind of side of things.
Yeah, so you're seeing this pretty interesting frenemy situation going on with Intel and AMD, and I think it's kind of a good thing in a way because it allows AMD to kind of promote themselves a little bit more, saying, hey, we are the better GPU company compared to, hey, Intel, you know, as you can see from a clear standpoint. But I think that down the line, you know, in a couple generations, if not the next, you'll see Intel kind of move away from AMD and start making their own GPUs again to integrate in their CPUs. So I wouldn't be surprised that they're together now, but they might stray away later on in the future.
Well, I know they had obviously they have integrated GPUs into most of Intel CPUs. It's just it's really surprising, mainly because the integrated HD graphics that a lot of Intel cards
they're
had,
terrible. You they're know not, they're absolutely atrocious.
It's the bare minimum to allow you to use more than one monitor.
Exactly.
But like, it's nice to see that because like it's showing that like. Like if you kind of like pay a close attention to a lot of the different like laptops and stuff like that between like price ranges of like let's say 500 to about 1,000, you really don't see NVIDIA anything in a computer until about $1,000 or higher. So you always see like an AMD GPU of some sort with it. So it's actually really nice to see that they're actually taking it a step further. So I really want to see what we're going to start seeing, especially in the laptop situation or even like in like let's say budget computer builds, see what like kind of discounts they're going to be offering or stuff like that.
Yeah, because if I recall correctly, AMD is also working with NVIDIA to make APUs with AMD processors and NVIDIA GPUs.
No way, really?
If I recall correctly, it might have just been like old rumor base, or it was discussion that never panned out.
That's cool.
It was something they were working on around the same time that Intel came to them to make APUs with Intel processors and the AMD graphics.
So AMD is basically the one company that's just like, hey, man, can we all just like get along?
Basically, I think they're going, please don't erase us from existence.
Yeah. Well, that's never going to happen because with the competition, you know, they always need a competitor. And in fact, I think from a stock option perspective, AMD owns part of Intel and Intel owns part of AMD, just like Microsoft owns part of Apple and Apple owns part of Microsoft. Nobody just really knows about it. You know, so, yeah, moving on, though, Intel did talk a little bit about autonomous driving and how they're going to be working with some partners as well. But honestly, I think that they're a little bit behind NVIDIA on this end, and they do have a less amount of partners compared to NVIDIA. As you heard in the announcement that CEO made, NVIDIA is already partnering up with Uber and Baidu and a lot of other Asian-based companies.
Tesla.
And Tesla, yes.
Yeah, that's the big one, I think.
It wasn't announced in the presentation with Tesla, but yeah. And Volkswagen, too, actually. So, I mean, they've got some huge players in the market that they're connecting with to take, you know, their platform and their GPUs to the next level. So I don't know what Intel is really going to do about this, but we're just going to have to wait and see what happens with this. Also, what was really cool that really caught my eye was Intel announced something called Intel Studios, which is a huge movie studio that basically captures 360-degree video at all times. So you guys remember The Matrix? You know that movie, The Matrix?
Yeah. You're talking about the scene where they do that camera shot that goes all around.
Yeah, the bullet time scene where he's like, whoa, and he just like leans back and the bullets are flying and all that stuff. So imagine that you could just capture that all the time. You know, when you're recording a movie.
Yeah, they always have those kind of like camera setups at award shows and everything like that, that they have the celebrities and everybody go on and get your picture in 3D.
Yeah. What they're going to actually be incorporating this technology into is football. What the NFL, I'm assuming, what they do is they plant a ring of cameras, these special cameras around the entire arena. And not only do they capture the picture of, you know, the person, they are also capturing depth as well. And these depth boxes are called voxels, and it's basically data that's, you know, transceived. And what's really cool is it gives you so many different angles that you could even produce an angle which you're getting a personal view from the quarterback's helmet throwing the football into the end zone and catching that touchdown. So you can actually see from the QB how that play was made during a replay, not just, you know, a side view.
So eventually everybody's going to be able to watch sports ball in VR, basically.
Yeah, basically. And, I think that this, you know, Intel Studios thing is really cutting edge. It's kind of far out there, volumetric video, but you could see it coming into play probably in the next decade.
See, that would be really cool. That's what's really going to push VR, especially like VR video.
Yeah, VR entertainment. Yeah, that's what you're going to need. And I know you've been meaning to talk about this, Brad. What's going on with Razer?
So Razer actually had two announcements this year. They didn't come with some crazy 3-mod or laptop like last time.
They're stolen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that laptop, proof of concept got stolen. Yeah.
I don't think any of their stuff got stolen this year.
Yeah, they didn't let Linus touch it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So the first thing that they showed off was Project Linda, which is, if anybody remembers the Motorola Atrix phone, where you could get kind of like the shell of a laptop that didn't really have any parts. It had a keyboard and a monitor. That was it. There was no motherboard or anything in this shell. You would plug your phone into it and be able to use your phone as a full computer. And they're bringing that to the Razer phone now. So you can get it's a laptop shell with a monitor, the trackpad from the mouse, keyboard. I don't think there was anything else on it. Maybe like a USB port or something like that. And you plug your Razer phone into the laptop, kind of like where the mouse pad is, and you're able to use it as a full laptop just from your phone, running full Android, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, so basically, what's cool is, you know, when the Atrix came out, it kind of failed because the hardware really wasn't there yet for it to do powerful computing.
Well, then it wasn't a very popular phone.
No, it wasn't. But now that things have caught up, you know, this proof of concept is really something that I think should be out there, you know, when this phone comes out. But like you said, yeah, it's basically a glorified docking station laptop that you can plug in your phone. And what's cool about it, too, is the phone itself in the docking station is the trackpad for the mouse on the laptop.
Yeah, because that's where it actually plugs in onto it. So, because I know it was Samsung with the Galaxy S8 and S8 Plus, you can get a little docking station to turn your phone into a desktop, but there's not something for turning it into a laptop. You pretty much have to supply the monitor and everything else. It just kind of gives you a docking base station that you kind of sit your phone on to, like, charge, like a wireless charging dock. But then Razer also showed off a wireless mouse that can charge from their mouse pad. And this one, I can't remember. Did it have a name?
Yeah, it was called Hyperflux.
Yes.
So basically, yeah, a wireless powered mousepad to a mouse.
The actual name was the Razer Mamba Firefly Combo Hyperflux.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
because it had Razer's highest-end Mamba, not motherboard, highest-end mouse called the Mamba, which is like, you know, obviously RGB up the wazoo, highest DPI that they have. And then they also combined the Firefly RGB mousepad, which not many people probably need. But they combined the two with a little bit of wireless technology. Because a lot of people, the unfortunate part with a lot of wireless mice is that obviously you have to charge your mouse at some point, and a lot of people usually forget that. With this, since it's constantly, you're going to constantly have it contacting with the mouse pad itself. It's constantly powered, so you don't have to worry about that issue whatsoever. You plug it in once, obviously, for the mouse pad, and that's it.
And what's cool, too, is there's no battery in it, so that actually makes the mouse more lightweight to use, so which is less strain on the wrist.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, it looks unique. I want to see where it's going to go.
I'm thinking, based on the videos that I saw online, it's probably going to go for about $250 or so.
I mean, so. I think the Mamba Mouse by itself is
120.
Yeah. So right. It's got to be up there in price. Mm-hmm. I think it also has the Chroma integration as well. So with Razer, Chroma is their buzzword for all their products now, where you can change the color of the lights for everything. So with the mouse pad, it has kind of a ring of lights surrounding it that you can change the color of. You can make it kind of a rainbow that kind of floats around, or you can have a flashlights. And they're integrating it with certain games. I think Team Fortress 2 was one of the first ones to integrate with Chroma, and it allows it to light up based on what's happening in the game. Mm. So when you're firing, it'll kind of flash. And when you're kind of getting hurt, it'll glow red and stuff like that. And they're integrating it with different games. So every game that's integrated with it actually acts differently toward, you know, keyboard, mouse, and mouse pad. And then they're, of course, making it so, I want to say last year at CES, they kind of showed a proof of concept of it being a light that kind of shows on your wall and it'll kind of.
Yeah, actually, Philips Hue came out with a kind of like a concept or something like that, where it coordinates your display with the mood setting of whatever you're playing on your screen.
Yeah, and Razer was
– changes the color of the lighting.
Yeah. Razer's Chroma is that entire concept. So this also features Razer Chroma, which is pretty cool.
Hmm.
But then there was Sony.
Yeah, good old Sony. I mean, obviously with Sony and all these others like Samsung and LG, you're going to see the new TVs, the new speakers, the new cameras, the new phones, the headphones, all that good stuff, you know? The headphones I thought were pretty interesting. They're coming out with the wireless Bluetooth earbuds. They're waterproof, which is kind of cool, sweatproof. But what I'm noticing, a trend in their products in particular, is that they're adding Google Voice Assistants to a lot of these products. So their speaker bars for home theater, their headphones, things like that. I'm just noticing a huge trend in like adding voice assistants to everything possible that you can. And with Sony, I'm noticing that this year that's what they did.
Which makes sense that they would partner with Google with it, because as far as voice recognition systems, there's Siri, which Apple holds that very close to them. They're not going to let another company use that. Mm-hmm. Then you have Amazon's Alexa, which – they're letting other people integrate with it, but it's still kind of on baby steps.
I have to disagree with you, man.
Really?
You got Siri, you got Google Voice, and then you got Alexa. I think Alexa is really good for home automation, and it's kind of entertaining, but it's pretty good on an intelligence level. I think from an intelligence level altogether, I think Google is definitely the key winner. But I don't think that they're there just yet for home automation. I think that there's more devices that are compatible for home automation on the Alexa platform than there is on Google going on right now. So, yeah, Google is the smartest one out of them all, but it doesn't work the friendliest with the rest of the products.
When I was going through like the home automation stuff, like the automatic locking doors and stuff like that, a lot of that supports Google before it supports Alexa, I found.
Some of it does and some of it doesn't. It depends on what the manufacturer is.
That's true.
But then again, you know, Alexa is maybe on their second generation or third generation. Google's maybe on their first or second. And I honestly, from, you know, the three series kind of in last at the moment. But my prediction with Apple is that they'll probably come out with their own voice assisted product in the home pretty soon here. You know,
they've been working on that for a while. Mm-hmm. Especially when they started showing off Siri integrated with their Beats kind of pill speakers.
Oh, really?
That's what they're called, right? The Beats pill?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing that Sony brought back, which was my personal favorite, was the little robot dog called Aibo. After a 20-year hiatus of not being around, Aibo is back. It's a very, very cute and filled with lots of cool tech. And what's really cool is the artificial intelligence inside of it over time will recognize you and kind of deepen its emotional bond with its owner. So if an owner has like a bunch of common tricks that it likes to do with a dog, like shake or roll over, it'll know that the dog will learn over time that those are the favorite tricks that the owner likes. And it also has a camera built into the nose. And it connects to the cloud via Wi-Fi. And over time, it develops AI to recognize you, you know, with facial recognition and knows, like, you know, that's the favorite person in the family household and things like that. So
I can't wait for family fights to happen because the robot dog likes them more than somebody else.
Yeah, that's what I kind of think is going to happen. But, you know, the best part about it is you don't have to pick up any poops. So that's the wonderful joy of not having a real dog compared to a robotic dog.
Plus, who doesn't want a robot dog?
I know. Right. It's only on sale in Japan right now. I think it's going for about $1,800.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only that much for a robot dog.
It's actually not too bad.
Yeah, it's filled with a lot of cool tech. It's got sensors on the top and on its back, and you can pet it, and it'll wag its tail, and you know, it's got a little bone, and it could detect the bone and actually chomp on the bone and grab it. It's got a little ball it could play with. You know, it's pretty cool. It's cute.
I remember when these came out so long ago, and its basic feature was it could sit and lay down.
Yeah, and it had a couple infrared sensors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they decided to not ditch that technology and completely advance it, is good.
I'm waiting for my robot cats. Wondering how those are going to come along.
Yeah, that's called a Roomba. It just ignores you and does its own thing.
I'm waiting for the Roomba that cleans the Roomba.
The self-cleaning Roomba?
Hey, no. That's too far.
We got to take this in steps?
Yes, baby steps.
Might become self-aware.
All iRobot.
Yeah, so moving on from Sony, obviously there was a really, really big talk amongst many companies about virtual reality, mixed reality, and augmented reality.
So pretty much to quickly explain the differences, virtual reality is you put on a headset and everything around you is created on screen. With augmented reality, it takes your surroundings in with you. So when you're sitting in a room with a table, you'll be able to see the table and interact with things on the table digitally as well. So HoloLens is the augmented reality that everybody kind of references to. Virtual reality is like the HTC Vive and Oculus Rift and everything like that. Then mixed reality kind of takes the two and combines it a little bit further. You have a screen that's taking pictures of everything that you see around you. It's not kind of like sunglasses with the HoloLens that kind of just puts a digital display over everything. It actually takes physical pictures. From what I recall, at least for the ones that have been shown, is it gets an idea of the entire room around you and then re-virtualizes it.
Yeah. Basically, it displays, you know, virtual objects, you know, without the need of like you said, like a HoloLens or something like that into a room.
Yeah.
But what I've noticed is a trend, especially at CES, is that standalone headsets are the key now. So no wires attached to, you know, a computer to enjoy your VR experience. You're noticing that these headsets have their own batteries in them, their own CPUs in them, their own screens in them, and you're able to enjoy them, you know, on your own, you know, with freedom to move your head without any wires attached. What I'm also starting to notice is that virtual reality and just, you know, VR, MR, and AR in general, it was kind of a buzz back in 2017, but I think it's definitely going to hit the mainstream this year compared to last year. I thought last year would be the year, but this year more so, with these products becoming more standalone and more available. I think Oculus, which is owned by Facebook, is coming out with a standalone headset pretty soon. It's going to be like a $200 headset. And then one thing that I want to bring up too with, you know, especially VR headsets is that, yeah, they're becoming more prominent in the mainstream and, you know, they're becoming standalone. But one thing that they're lacking right now is the ability to do eye tracking. So, you know, people sometimes complain that when they're in these environments that they get dizzy or, you know, kind of have some nauseated, you know, problems. You're going to notice that some companies trying to improve this eye tracking technology, maybe not now, but maybe in the next couple of years to improve, you know, the easeability and use of VR.
Yeah, and the one that was announced at CES was the new Vive from HTC, which that one, it has the wireless battery pack compatibility, and then it also has its own headphones. So it brings you the full experience in one headset, which is really cool. I'm looking forward to that one. Like, that might be the VR headset I finally buy.
The Vive?
The new Vive, yeah.
That seems to be the one for the gaming types, you know?
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
I'm just hoping for, hopefully, in the next 5 years, a headset doesn't require as many sensors, or at least they give you the sensors in the box. Because the one unfortunate part about the Vive is that they only, so like, for it to work, you have to have three sensors to kind of capture everything in a triangle space. They only give you two.
Really?
In the box, you have to buy the third one separately. Now, I don't know if they're going to include it with the new one. They haven't really said. But with the original Vive, you do need two. So obviously, you can only be really caught in like a parallel spectrum.
That's how they get you, man.
That's how they get you. It's like another $50.
Yeah.
Now you can really play your games.
Yeah. After you buy these 500 accessories that you need.
Exactly.
So, I mean, what's going to make people want to use these devices, obviously, is what kind of entertainment you're going to see. So what I thought was interesting is for all our wrestling fans out there, WWE actually revealed that they're going to have a VR channel on a network called NextVR. And what NextVR does is basically do like live 3D sports and other streaming shows on their platform. So I kind of think that what's cool about WWE is that they're usually not on the cutting edge, but right on the line when it comes to emerging technologies and trying to take advantage of them. And I think that they're doing that in the case because they notice that their users and their listeners and their watchers all use digital technology at a higher adoption rate than most other consumers in other areas. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was pretty cool. And also, there's this company called Blackbox, and they're kind of incorporating fitness, gaming, and VR into one experience. So like you would go to like kind of like a franchise gym or something, for example, and you would kind of put on a VR helmet, and let's say you're fighting a monster with some like hard punches or something like that. Like you're using like high strenuous activity in a VR environment, which is like a gaming style experience, but you're burning calories at the same time.
I would like to be there for the first run of those activities. I don't want to be there for the third one.
Just the fun ones?
No. Like just the first run of them. I don't want to be there after they've been used.
Oh, right.
Oh, because of all the sweat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you could get your workout on, you know, play a game and experience VR at the same time. Kind of cool. Kind of interesting concept.
Yeah, I can say when it comes to CES, it's always fun to look at these kind of things that are coming out in the future. And this CES did not disappoint whatsoever. There was a lot from various companies and plenty that we didn't even get a chance to go over either. Because we had, you know, stuff from 3M, which makes kind of like the fastening kind of stuff to walls and everything. We had Aflac actually came out with some cool stuff. And it's...
You're noticing also a trend in technology for the elderly being on the rise as well.
Yeah.
I saw a shoe with a built-in sensor that kind of detects falls and calls people and warns people of a fall being detected if, you know, an old person, you know, has an accident. Also, an interesting one was that there's a belt that you can buy with built-in airbags that has a built-in gyroscopic accelerometer. So it could detect a fall for somebody that's elderly and launch some airbags out to kind of capture and prevent like hip fractures and things like that. Also, like a lot of lightweight scooters. Mm. So they're like really lightweight, foldable. You could put them in the backseat of your car and bring them out with ease, and, you know, which is really cool. But, you know, another trend that I'm noticing as well with everything that's going on with Samsung, LG, is that voice assistance is in everything now. Samsung's got Bixby. Oh, yeah, we didn't even talk about Bixby.
Nobody talks about Bixby.
But then again, nobody does. Yeah.
They disabled Bixby in a lot of their phones.
Oh, yeah. That's what most people do. So, yeah, now Bixby is on your TV for Samsung. It's in everything. You're noticing the Internet of Things in a lot of appliances. Washers are talking to dryers now. So you put your load of laundry in the washer and then you put your load of laundry in the dryer and you don't have to even set the setting anymore on what, you know, high, low, or medium because it knows automatically. Mm-hmm. Just a lot of things that are going on, you know, with communication not only to the internet, but communication between each other.
Yeah.
You know,
it's definitely another fun CES, and I can't wait for all of this stuff to come out that I'll probably never be able to afford for the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. That's always the fun part, is getting to see all the toys that I won't be able to play with until they lower in price. Mm-hmm. But with that, we are all out of time at the breakfast table. But before we leave, do you have a recommendation of the week for us today, Darshan?
Yeah, actually, I do. Any of those that are an Amazon Prime member, I noticed that you can actually download an app called Prime Photos. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, but download Prime Photos on your mobile device. It allows you to do backups of your photos from your phone into the Amazon Prime Cloud, and it's unlimited. So you have the ability to do full resolution images backed up, you know, so you don't have to necessarily use, or maybe a second alternative way to back up, let's say, the iCloud or Google Photos. This is a great alternative solution. So most people don't know that our Amazon Prime members already, that this app actually exists. So if you have a moment, go ahead, download it, set it up on your device, set it to automatically back up your phone, and it'll back up your photos for you and your videos for you. And you're already paying for the service. If you're a Prime member, you might as well use it. And that's a great secondary backup tool, because most of these services, such as like Google Photos and iCloud, they don't back it up at the max resolution that you actually take the photos in. Mm-hmm. They actually compress them. So
I take it that it's Android and iOS for that.
Yeah, I don't know iOS, but I know Android does it for a fact in Google Photos. Yeah, so it's a great backup solution. You know, hey, you don't have to pay that extra money to iCloud to get the extra gigabytes for storage. Just use the, you know, Prime membership that you have already and take advantage of it with this program.
And with that, it is time for us to say so long. But we will be back next week, where we're going to talk about our theater experiences. So pretty much all the fun and the not so fun times we've had in theaters, along with our recommendations of where to go. So we will catch you all next time at the breakfast table.